Welcome to ConOb.
Today we're going to be talking about a movie that tended to divide some in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Some thought this movie was just right. Some thought it was too out of what they normally would expect. And some thought it was a brave new turn. Today we're going to be discussing Thor Ragnarok. This is contractually obligated. Larry Snowdy and this other person is.
Alan Shockley.
You were going to say, before I interrupted, what were you going to say?
Was going to say there was the movie was divided the Marvel community into those who liked it because it was funny and different, and those who liked it because it was good.
Was there happened to be a small community that thought it was both by chance?
Yeah, there was also a small Venn diagram consensus of people who enjoyed the movie because it was funny and good.
Okay, because I like to consider that I'm in that small minority. So we'll start the discussion now. What's going on? What did you think?
It is my favorite Thor movie. That's my one sentence description of Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
I didn't hate the other
Why?
two.
Okay, but why would you consider this your favorite compared to the other two?
I like the sensibility of this movie, the recklessness that it has, the very deliberate foreshadowing and exposition feeding it does. It just does it unashamedly. And then gets it out of the way and then goes ahead and destroys everything it just told you was really important. And also I think Taika Waititi's hysterical.
I thought it was a very funny movie. I thought it was a very good movie. It didn't weigh itself down so much with drama and history, with the gravitas, pretty much. It still had drama, and you could still feel that things were important, but to be able to have those little lighthearted moments and stuff like that, to me, added greatly to the film. And that's something I've always liked about the Marvel Universe, is that they did have comedy in them, but this seemed to go a little bit farther than normal than you would normally see in a Marvel movie.
The first Thor movie had had jokes in it. Everybody laughed and thought that Kat Dennings was really funny for, 6 months.
Well, the thing, okay, we're going with the comedy element here. The thing that got me is I understand that Anthony Hopkins is a good actor, okay, considered a great actor, okay, but to watch him playing Loki, playing Odin, at the beginning of the movie where they're doing the play, and Loki is pretending to be Odin. He's disguised as Odin. So watching Anthony Hopkins play Loki playing Odin, to me, was just funny.
I've read that that's his favorite thing he's done in the Marvel Universe.
And it's obviously the best thing I think he's done in the Marvel Universe. I thought that was hilarious. I thought it added to it,
Yeah, I could have done with one more shooting day of Anthony Hopkins.
It's I just I some people consider it sacrilege. I think it just adds to the whole mythos of them, But I'm not saying that there weren't problems to the film.
Okay.
I mean we tend to gush at times about how good these films are and whatever, but there are things I did not like about this.
Well, go ahead and tell me, because I'm in the middle of my fifth viewing of it
Okay.
at
The
this
Warrior
point. Oh, you didn't like it? They murdered them all.
It's not the fact that they murdered them all, okay? It's that two-thirds of them got killed in an instant with no reaction time, no defense, what have you. You know, and I can understand that to a certain extent. It's to show how much of a badass Hela is. Okay? That she can take out two out of the three warriors with no effort. I get that. But at the same time, you built these warriors to be warriors, you know, and to see them taken out that quick is just kind of disappointing. I mean, one of them did get in a lot of offense during later scene, you know. I mean, it's like, okay, so he's the one that carried the weight for the other two? Is that what we're going with here? But it just that disappointed me, because it's like you took a it's kind of like you build up a wrestler, you make him this hoss that can't be beat, and then suddenly he gets beat with a DDT or something, you know, just with a schoolboy. It just, there's no effort whatsoever.
Yes,
sorry. I went to a different genre. I apologize.
Yes, but is that a flaw in the movie, or just a personal distaste of the use of character?
I think it's kind of a mix of both, because again, when you have an established character set like this, to where it's like, okay, this is who they are. They stood up to this and this and this, and for them to be cut down that quickly. Like I said, I understand you're trying to show how much of a badass Hela is.
Well, not just that. There's also a sort of edict that these movies are a little outside the construct of the film. These movies were tended to be a little too Asgard-y. There are two problems. There's too much on Earth and too much Shakespearean Asgardian stuff. Which is both very expensive in set and costume design, and for nothing. Every single scene that takes place in Asgard has to be opulent and amazing, even if that's just a scene of dialogue. So he was given the, you know, kind of an edict to shake up the status quo, as it were. And if you keep all the established characters of Asgard and don't have an Asgard for them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed to me that it didn't. It's not like they did anything uncharacteristic. They didn't even get a chance to mount a defense.
Yeah, I understand that. It's just kind of disappointing to me. I mean, I'd rather have seen them, if they're going to die, I'd rather have seen them die later in the film, in right before
heroic battle. This is the Admiral Akbar argument.
Have them go out to where they deserve Valhalla. You know, that's all I'm saying. Because I mean, when they died with just a simple knife through them, I could see the Valkyrie coming up and going, "Really? I gotta take it. Yeah, let's go. Come on, get on the horse." You know, just Valkyrie being very disappointed.
You know, it's not explained in the film what the hell they are doing there. Mm-hmm. That place, that is not their normal post, but it's like it's shortcut storytelling in that Thor has just arrived. He's unmasked Loki as a pretender Odin,
right?
And the guy he put in charge of the Bifrost, he has been knocked down to janitor to clean that stuff up, and Thor puts his two most trusted people in charge of watching the Bifrost until they can find
a suitable replacement.
No,
I know, but that's suitable replacement, ain't it?
Yes, but I was trying to find the word. They did all that storytelling in half a second, just showing them in that room. And at first, it bothered me, and it made me go, why are they even there, just to get them killed? Which, you know, technically, I guess is true, but it also, it serves the story, sort of. It kind of helps tell that story without spending too much time on Asgard. That's one, the what is that room called? It's got a name. Doesn't matter. It's gone now.
Porter. There we go.
Right.
Two to beam up. No, I'm sorry. Wrong genre.
All right, so I'm going to dismiss that as a personal thing and not a flaw in the movie, just for my own benefit, because I'm interested in what you and in the opinions of people who think there are problems with this movie. That makes sense.
I didn't see that there were a lot of problems with this movie. I just said there were a few things that that kind of got me. I mean, oh, let's go with Hela for a second.
Okay.
I'm good. First of all, Cate Blanchett as Hela is hella hot. That's all I can tell you about that. She gave me pause, and I'm like, damn, all right. But one of the things that got me is a couple of things that she. Well, one thing that she said, and one thing that we were shown. One thing that she was said was, "Where do you think we get all this gold?" Okay, and the thing is then when you see a picture of what Asgard looks like, you realize there's really no mining deposits anywhere. So she made a hell of a point, really. It's like, where do you think we got all this gold?
Yeah, when you see the city from far, it is clad in gold.
But the thing is, you also see the whole shape of Asgard. There's no mines there. They're not mining these things. They
No, it
had to
is.
have gotten it from somewhere.
That place is put there by the will of Odin. It doesn't belong on that. What is
Yeah.
it? A huge cliff, asteroid type thing?
Something like that, yeah. So that kind of got me. And one of the other things which wasn't said but we were shown was I believe it's the huge Muriel on the ceiling after she broke the old Muriel and we're sorry, she broke the new Muriel and then we're seeing the older one that was originally painted or etched onto the ceiling. She's holding Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
I don't remember them making any mention of that whatsoever in the film.
No, but it explains why she could ha hold it.
Yeah. And
You know,
because I mean, go ahead.
it also makes you wonder what is the worthiness factor here.
Exactly.
Is it just because she's the spawn of Odin that makes her worthy?
Well, the thing is from what we have always been led to believe, I understood anyway, was that the Thor was made, sorry, that the hammer was made for Thor. Now we're finding out that's not true.
Odin had the hammer made and gave it to Thor. That's kind of the shorthand.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, you automatically assume that it was made for Thor. You know, and so they to see this, it's like, no. But you're right. It does make you question what is the worthiness of it? I mean, where do you get that what is the statue, you know?
Or possible that it didn't contain that inscription at that time, and he had it inscribed to give to Thor so that he wouldn't misuse the power.
Yeah. So I mean it's basically the second time around and we learned from the first mistake. Here's how we correct it. You know, and so okay, yeah, I'll go with that. But one of the other things that got me is Asgardians are gods. Being gods, they are long lived.
Right.
Why do they not remember Hela?
Well,
That's what got me. It's like, okay, I understand that gods are born all the time, and I guess that, yes, some gods have to die, but that would involve a long list of gods dying and none of their history being taught.
well, Odin has a vested interest in it not being taught. He papered over it, let's say, and also let's say that through the years, battles and wars, lots of people did die. And
Yeah.
the people who remembered, because you gotta think that Heimdall remembers who she is, because he pretty quickly starts rounding people up and getting them the
Yeah.
hell out of there, and he didn't wait around for her to murder everybody before he did that.
Exactly.
So he must have seen she was there before, and but I don't know how you explain it other than you could say that he could see where Odin was, saw the battle, and split before that.
Right.
But I would
bad stuff's coming, Bob.
I would expect that Heimdall would remember, and a lot of the senior members of the court would remember, but because the king has said never speak of her again, they don't.
Yeah, I understand, but it just seems like there was too many people that didn't realize who the hell she was, including one of the Warriors Three. Was like, no, was it him that said it, or was it somebody in the crowd?
He said, "Whoever you are."
Well,
if you still just hear me.
Yeah, well. Even if we go with the fact that he's not supposed to even say her name or mention her, that would still make sense to whoever you are. So, yeah, okay, I can go with that.
Also, I don't think Odin is beyond putting a mind whammy on the entire planet, if that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that even though she described who she was, he couldn't remember because he's not allowed to remember because he's under some spell.
I gotcha. Oh, Odin is not a good god. So Scourge.
Okay, Scourge.
Scourge. I like saying Scourge. Yeah. Anyway, Hela took out a whole battalion by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we were just talking about it. What the hell does she need him for? She took down that whole thing with ease. She barely got a workout. What the hell does she need him for?
Because it's lonely at the top. Plus, I think she has this. She knows she has this public relations issue, where she cannot speak to the peons without murdering a few of them at a time.
You know, there are times I've gotten that way too. I can see where that comes through.
Right.
You know, because they're especially with kids. Anyway.
So I think it's a combination of loneliness and utility.
Gotcha. But speaking of him, I like the first time that we see him. He's in there with two women, and he's just trying really hard to impress them.
Yes.
With his stuff.
With his scooter.
The Vespa. Yeah. That's what I just started laughing hysterically. One of his things he's most proud of is a Vespa.
Yeah.
You know.
Behold.
Exactly. But I will tell you that the sight of him playing with a shake weight was not a sight I need to see.
Fun fact, Taika Waititi was in Green Lantern, the movie. He was the sidekick best friend.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And that is the only thing he took from the set.
Was the shake weight?
Yeah, it was in Green Lantern too.
Oh wow! So the crossover from one universe to another is a shake weight.
That's right.
And that in Ryan Reynolds. Oh man! So. Do you think they gave too much away? Because we were talking before about the fact that she had Thor's hammer and what about her ability to hold it and everything. Do you think they gave too much away in the trailers when they showed the hammer being destroyed? Or do you think that just kind of drew more people to wanting to see the movie because, oh my God, she's got to be a badass if she can do that?
I don't know. The big reveal of this movie is it takes an hour before the Hulk shows up, and they put that shit right in the trailers.
Yeah.
Which, the first time I saw the movie, I was kind of disappointed that they robbed that moment from the movie.
Yeah.
So any other surprises besides that, once you see that and you see Thor's got his short hair, you're almost already thinking, where's his hammer?
Yeah, I understand that.
Because everything is so out of character. I don't know how you could have handled this differently, because definitely I was more excited to see this movie because Thor was in Hulk was in it. So I don't know how you keep that out of the trailers. I was also excited because shit was changing, and it was obvious from the trailer. So on the one hand, I think it was a great trailer. On this other hand, I was bummed that there were so many things in it that I wish I had seen first on screen instead of on my
Yeah.
TV.
I gotcha. I gotcha. Because, I mean, it. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of the Hulk and the fighting and the discussions that they had when they weren't fighting. You bad friend.
No, the greatest thing about that is that those conversations are mirrors of conversations he has as Banner as well,
Yeah.
right down to the same lines in some cases.
True.
It's so subtle. It's not like they're showed back to back. They're like 30 minutes apart in the movie, but it's kind of genius that you're not really my friend. You're just using me.
I like you more than Hulk.
Yeah, no, it's with you with the science stuff and the brain.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then tell Hulk, I like you more than Banner. You're great. Just like, wow. It threw me. It threw me. And
Was a great
you gotta
buddy film that we didn't even know we wanted.
Exactly. And they did really well with it too, because it's just like Jesus. Oh, okay. So Thor, I don't know how you want to say it, but he ends up on a planet where the Valkyrie has to come, and she, the bounty hunter, we'll say, because I don't think they've actually named her as Valkyrie in this film or not. But the bounty hunter shows up to collect him.
Scrapper 1492, I think.
Something like that. The first that we see her, she comes out of the ship and proceeds to fall down drunk. I think that's a beautiful way to open her up, man.
You know what? Every single person had a fantastic introduction in this movie. Their first on-screen presence was just brilliant, but his right off the top with Serta was great. Loki's reveal was great. Doctor Strange is in this movie. I don't know how to stack. I don't know how you stack all these things together and still come up with a cohesive story, and yet it still be really funny. As it's kind of a magic trick.
Exactly. Well, that's why they had Doctor Strange in there.
Oh, yes. Who the really great cameo.
Yes, it's well worth it to watch it, actually. Just like, damn. But one of the things that impressed me about,
Hold
I'm just
on.
like, go ahead.
This is a new segment I'm calling my wife's favorite part. My
Okay.
wife's favorite part of the movie, undoubtedly, the loudest laugh that she got is when Doctor Strange is doing his transporting thing. And Thor is literally, they pop on screen and he is sideways falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
He like appears just above the stairs sideways. And she laughed out loud. So
That's
I had to rewind the dialogue. All right,
great.
that
Okay.
concludes my wife's favorite part, which is probably
Okay, so.
because there were several shirtless scenes, which I'm sure she was also very fond of.
Oh, I'm sure about that one. Next week, I'm going to introduce a segment of things that my dog likes. So, or scenes that my dog likes.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a wife, so
I was gonna say, are you gonna go get a dog now? Fucking forced it to watch movies.
Exactly. He's more DC-ish, though. That's the thing.
Were saying, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, man. Don't worry about it. It's if it's not playing Justice League, he just sends his room. It's horrible.
Talking introductions.
Well, we're talking about Valkyrie and what have you, and I like I said, she walks out of the ship, takes a couple steps, falls over drunk. Okay. Then she's pretty much saying that she's taking Thor with her. The group of nomads or cannibals or whatever you want to call them. Like, no. And she just has those things on her arms where basically the guns connected to the ship are responding to her arm. And I'm like, that is awesome. I would love to see that in a video game. You know, that to me would be awesome to see. Of course, I don't like the fact that it would that it would short out every once in a while. You know, she had trouble getting it started at first.
Remember, we were talking about the Black Panther tech and how it was just magical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You were just supposed to flow with it. In this, the tech seemed practical. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You didn't need explanation for how those things work. They just work. They mirrored her arm movements. You understand how that works. She can do something to affect a trigger. I think it was a thumb trigger. There was no need for explanation for any of that. I think once during the film, Pam turned to me and said, "This guy seems to be all powerful, this grand master thing." And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Well, why is his hologram so shitty?" And I was like, "They have to differentiate. Yeah, you can't just put a picture perfect human floating in space. We won't accept it. You have to, it has to look like technology of some sort. Plus, you know, what are you envisioning?" She goes, "I don't know. It just doesn't look, I don't know." Right.
Jeez. Well, speaking of the Grandmaster, of Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster,
let's do his introduction, because it is one of my favorite parts of the movie is the Willy Wonka song playing.
Exactly.
When he's coming down the hallway in the chair. Oh my God, that is so great.
Well, the thing is it took me a while to recognize the song.
Yeah, because there's voiceover work going on and there's crazy visuals the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sitting there going, and I'm like, they're playing Pure Imagination. Oh my God.
Right.
And I'm giggling, and the people around me are like, "What the hell are you giggling at?" And I'm like, "It's Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka."
It's from the
Yeah. And just so I when it came out on video, on DVD, what have you, I had to play it for my roommate. And just to show him that I'm not crazy. Well, I am crazy, but I mean, I wasn't making this up. You know,
there's subtlety all through this movie that is there just to make you happy, or just to make Taika Waititi happy, which also makes me happy.
That just sounds so nice.
All right, so we've gone through Doctor Strange, Anthony Hopkins, Cate Blanchett, Carl Urban, The Death of the Warriors 3, Jeff Goldblum, and his assistant, whose name I don't know, but she should be getting more work for sure.
Oh man, she's a catty bitch.
Anybody who can keep a straight face through 30 takes of Jeff Goldblum, they deserve some sort of SAG award, I'm sure.
Exactly. They should call it the Jeff Goldblum Award, too.
Jeff Goldblum Supporting Actor Award.
I did like the thing at the end with him, with Goldblum.
Yeah, let's call it a draw.
After the credits. big hand for everybody.
Hey, good revolution, guys.
God.
You really did it.
You know, and you had to have someone to go against, so you know, good for us. I think you're forgetting two characters that were pretty good, although one of them didn't even speak.
I didn't even say Tessa Thompson. So yeah, so we're up to six now. Go ahead, Meek.
Well, Meek and Quark.
Right.
You know, I don't know how you can describe Quark though. What do you think he brought to the film?
Well, let's talk about for a minute about the Planet Hulk of it all.
Okay.
Because Marvel was, up to the release of this film, Marvel was fighting back rumors that they were making this Planet Hulk movie. Everybody wanted it. It's a great run in the comics.
Yeah.
And they ended Age of Ultron with Hulk in the ship. And so everybody was like, well, that's it. That's the beginning of Planet Hulk, and they denied it, denied, 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 denied. I think they denied so much to the point where they were like, okay, we got to make this Planet Hulk movie now.
Or at least the facility, I mean, at least the thing, yeah.
Right. Something close to it. So they kind of backdoor it in with this Thor movie without changing too much, but yet changing all of the, like, if you were thinking of the Planet Hulk and the sequels therein, World War Hulk, you can't go there from here. You can't get there from here unless there is some woman that Hulk knocked up within the last 2 years on the planet.
Right.
But the point I'm getting at is that they stuffed this Planet Hulk movie into this Thor Ragnarok movie, which normally, under other circumstances, I would just be against. It's one of my problems with DC films is they take too many storylines and stuff them all into one movie
Right.
in hopes that they'll get the fans of all those storylines instead of fans of those characters.
Exactly.
And then they give short shrift to each of those stories that deserve more. But
Agreed.
for this movie, it was dead on the right thing to do.
Yeah, because with the Planet Hulk and the World War Hulk storyline, basically you have actually I'd have to go back and reread it because it might have been just the Planet Hulk storyline. Is Planet Hulk, he was shipped away to another planet. He was there for a number of years, realized what had
Well,
happened,
what happened was
he came back and got his revenge.
the Avengers put him in a ship because he was too dangerous and just shot him off into space with no destination. He ends up wrecking the ship and landing on Sakaar in pretty much the scenario described in this film, where he gets in this contest, but then he does have a revolution and becomes pretty much the sitting king of Sakaar and takes a queen for the wife. And she has a baby. The queen dies based on some malfeasance to do with the Marvel Universe. If they had just left him alone, he'd been fine. But since his wife got killed, he decides to th literally throw an asteroid at the Earth and ride it as a ship back to Earth.
God.
That's what happens. And land it in New York City in Times Square and take his revenge on the Earth by literally cracking it in half. That's all kind of silly, but the point you get at is that he had a wife on Sakaar and she has a kid who becomes Scar, the son of Hulk. Which now that storyline's got to come out somehow different. Like, oh, remember when he was before he met, let's say, Valkyrie, because you know him and Valkyrie were more than play wrestling. Don't you think that was implied in this film?
I think it was implied in this film, but at the same time, the logistics of it hurt my head.
She's a tough girl.
Grand Canyon is the only thing I can think of.
The look of Thor's face when Hulk gets out of
Yeah.
the hot tub.
Well, you just got to think of proportions alone, man. And this is not something I ever thought we would ever discuss on something like this, but you brought it there. I'm saying,
I'm just asking, don't you think it was implied that they were playful?
yeah, but the thing is what I would hope is that, yeah, she liked the Hulk and everything like that, but if they were going to get playful and whatever, somewhere along the line, Bruce would have popped out, but the thing is, they made it well known that Bruce has been the Hulk for over 2 years. So
Yes. Some
that shot that to hell.
in the Planet Hulk comics. It's something to do with the planet that keeps Bruce out. But after a certain period of time, the Hulk just has so you become used to the control that he now stays at it. But th this is a different Hulk. This is a different Banner. There, Banner has control over his Hulkish at this when he got shot up in the air. And I don't know, this it goes from straight from this movie into Civil War, and he didn't seem to still have complete control over anything.
Civil War.
Not Civil War, Infinity War.
Yeah, okay. I was about to say, dude. No, yeah. About to say, because it's. And then also, we can't really get into that one, but that did bring up the question of what the hell happened that Hulk's afraid to come out and face Thanos, you know? But
Yeah,
all I'm saying,
we don't
go ahead.
know. We don't know if it's if it's afraid or if he's damaged or don't know. All we
Yeah.
know is that Banner can't seem to do it. But
I
if you put Banner in enough danger, I think
it
that's,
pretty much has
yeah, I think that's what happens. Like
to.
is shown in this movie. He could not change into Hulk willingly in this movie, or he wouldn't have gone face first into the bridge, which is a great, great, great comedy moment.
It's a great comedy moment, but at the same time, you're like, okay, he just fell on the bridge. He's got to be dead. But then he came to life and stopped the wolf.
Well, he hulked out, yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is he hit the bridge first.
No,
You
I
saw.
get it. Yeah, I get it. He broke his neck and his face, but this is established canon from the first Hulk movie where he jumps out of the helicopter and face plants into the asphalt. And then the Hulk pops out of the crater-sized hole that was there.
I didn't think any of the Hulk films were considered canon anymore.
No, the one that came out just before Iron Man is still canon because Thunderbolt Ross is still Thunderbolt Ross. William Hurt was in Civil War, and the events referenced in that movie have been referenced in the Marvel films.
Different dimension. That's all I'm saying.
When the Sokovia Accords are first being discussed, he talks about the damage that the Hulk did in New York, and they show video of it. So that movie is canon. It took place. So that means somewhere out there's a leader.
I'm waiting for him to show up. That would be awesome. What you know, I the Ed Norton film wasn't really that bad.
No, I liked it. But
You know.
it was an improvement over the previous one.
Yeah, oh.
I kind of like that one too, except for some of the rubbery stuff and the dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of that movie was wrong-headed. I appreciated the attempt by the director to make it look comic booky. I appreciated the panels and the weird transitions, and they went, "Oh, that's what everybody hated." No, that's the part that we liked.
No, I got news for you. That's the part most people hate.
Oh well, they don't know what they're talking about.
I agree. I'm just saying, but most of the people that I had to listen to talk about it, and then the panels went back and forth. I didn't know how to keep up. I'm like, well, then you really shouldn't be watching movies at all.
This is a comic book film, you realize, right?
You know, I mean, just should not be watching this.
I'm a Hulk kid. I was alive when Hulk was on TV in prime time, and it was my favorite day of the week to sit down with my dad and watch The Incredible Hulk on TV. And so the Norton one was the closest one. It kind of went back to
Yeah, the one
show
back to the roots.
version. They even had shots that were directly out of the TV show opening where the gamma ray thing was shooting on his head. And they had Bill Bixby's TV show before the Hulk on the show on the TV in that movie, which made me happy for some reason.
Want to say the magician, but I don't know if that was it or not.
No, it's something about, oh, I can't remember. It's something about because of that and form
Okay.
David did his the courtship of Eddie's father.
Oh, good Lord.
That was
Oh,
the
man.
show shown in the film.
Okay.
But anyway, that movie was closest to the old Hulk show, and so that's why it holds a place in my heart. But what I'm getting at is the Hulk is my favorite guest star in all of these movies, all the way across. I love Doctor Strange, but the Hulk showing up makes me happy, and him showing up in this movie made me so happy. As a matter of fact, I might have skipped this movie altogether if he wasn't in it, and
Really?
that would have been a shame because it still would have been pretty good probably.
But I say Korg and every oh come on man,
Well,
piss off Ghost.
you wouldn't have Korg if it wasn't on, if it didn't have the planet storyline. And that's where we were getting at, was that Korg and Meek are essential characters in the Planet Hulk's storyline. They are his war bond. That's what they called them, right? War bonds.
Yeah.
Best friends for life, all the way back to World War Hulk. They came down to kill everybody. Except I believe in the comics, Meek betrays him at some point.
It's been a long time since I've read it, but it sounds correct.
Having said how much I love the Hulk, it was a fantastic read. If you ever get a chance to get Marvel Unlimited again, it is a good weekend.
Okay. I personally, I like the comedy bits. With Korg and Meek, and when they're first introduced, and Meek is back there doing his little sword dance type thing. Ha ha! Without saying it, he kept it all inside. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Again, another great thing, another Watiti shorthand is that Meek is like a larval insect. He doesn't really have hands or legs. You don't get that or see that till the end of the movie when you're like, what happened to his sword hands? Oh, that's right. He doesn't really have them. They're attached to him.
It's beautiful. That's all I'm saying. It's beautiful.
We had no
So
right to be this good.
exactly, and I feel kind of spoiled in a way, you know, but in a good way, because I mean it's like it's a treat, you know, and just
Yes, but not in the way that it was a treat to see Nightcrawler in the X-Men, in a rather shitty X-Men movie, be a perfect Nightcrawler. That was a treat. You were like, oh, they nailed it. That first scene with the bam, 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 bam.
Now you're starting to sound like a 70s porno.
This movie was a treat all the way through. Having experienced the entire film was a treat. You're like, wow. But
Agreed.
more important than how happy it made most of us is that it completely destroys the Thor mythos all the way, beginning to end. Oh, did I mention that Alan Grant was in this movie?
Really, where was he?
Dr. Alan Grant from the Jurassic Park films played Odin in the fake play at the beginning. And
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking.
he's got my favorite non-line in the movie.
Okay.
It's when Thor reveals Loki, Odin, to be actually Loki. It cuts to a reaction shot of the guys who are on stage. He just takes out his eye patch as to get a better look at this reveal. It's so great. When you get a chance to rewatch it, just pay attention to that one part. Because it's hard to see because everybody else is reacting in a comical way. But his face, and then he just takes the eye patch off. Oh, it's so great. Oh, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. They tear it all. They go to great pains to make sure you understand the mythology pretty damn well. They make every other character give the history of how you got to this place where Asgard exists, and who's the king, and who are the subjects, and how many realms there are. And then they just tear it all down. They take away his hammer, they cut his hair, they take away his costume. Everything about what you know Thor to be is gone. The Warriors Three are gone. There are no more Asgardians. There is no Asgard. The bridge is gone. Heimdall, he somehow made it out of this movie alive.
Well, this
Yeah,
movie, yes.
this movie.
Not for long, though. That's all I'm saying.
And if anybody is harmed the most by the next movie chronologically, Infinity War, I think it's Taika Waititi because they went to great pains to undo his changes in that movie. It's almost Thor's movie because they had to build him back up, they got to give him his eye back. They got to give him a new hammer. They pretty much put him back in his old costume, I think.
It took a while. I don't know what to say to that. I can just sit back and go, yeah, pretty much.
Well, my question is, do you feel like it was, you know, do you like the status quo that was made after the end of this movie where Asgard is an, there is no Asgard? In the comics, of course, they end up back on Earth, and I think that was the idea was, oh, we're going to get back to the place where they're floating over Norway or something.
Yeah. Well, actually, from what I remember, if I remember right, when they came to Earth in the comics, they were in Arizona.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of the desert somewhere.
That's, yeah. I was more, I wanted to see where they were going with it before I reserved judgment on anything. I'm like, okay, you're here now. Where do you go from here? What is your destination? You know, and I was willing to go along for that ride because, I mean, from what they did in this movie, it some stuff took me aback. I wasn't expecting like the humor of it. I wasn't expecting humor, and I wasn't expecting the seriousness
right
from it at the same time. You know, so I'm like, okay, I've come with you on this adventure. You've brought me here. Where are we going to go from here? And I'm in. Let me just buckle in again. Take me where we're going to go, and I'm willing to reserve judgment until then.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You bought in. You were like, I'm having a good time on this ride, and I'm buying in. We're going where we're going. And then the end of the movie happens, and Asgard is destroyed. As he said, it's okay. You've got a great foundation there. We can rebuild and make this place this shining beacon of freedom and adversity over struggle. And it all blows up, and he goes, no, your foundations are gone now. That's like the thesis of the movie, right? The foundations of Thor are all gone now.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's the king of Asgard, which isn't a place, it's a people.
Yeah.
And before the fucking last credit rolls, that's all over too.
Now I'm depressed. Thank you.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. But that would be unfair to judge this movie based on the next movie.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. They could undo every fucking thing that happened in the next movie. In the
yeah.
following movie.
And that's what I'm hoping for. I don't want to see everything. I mean, there's got to be repercussions for the next movie to happen at the, you know, oh God, now timeline's jumping all over the place.
Yeah, the repercussions from Infinity War and its sequel are going to be, we don't have to pay Robert Downey Jr. $60 million per movie anymore.
Yay! As long as they don't bring in a teenage Tony Stark like they did back in the 90s. Oh God.
I think they're doing that right. I don't know. I just saw an image online, and this is unrelated, of from Dan Slott, who's writing Iron Man now.
Mm-hmm.
That has a it's just a single panel, but it is Tony Stark as a teenager. And he's wearing the exact same outfit from Less Than Zero or 16 Candles. One of those movies, I forget.
Okay. Sorry.
I'll send you the link because it's pretty cute. But okay. Anyway, I don't care what the repercussions are. I'm along for the ride. I just want them to get Taika Waititi back for the second one.
Yeah.
The combination of one dude from New Zealand and two people from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom to do whatever Chris Hemsworth wants him to do, which is basically what happened here,
right,
caused a fantastic movie to be made. And I want them to do the exact same thing. Just hand the same truckload of money over to the same people and let them go. And we've been talking for 45 minutes and we haven't even discussed how the movie looks.
Well, I think when it comes to the MCU movies, it's pretty much staggeringly beautiful.
Oh yeah,
the shots are awesome. But the thing is when you take into it that this is Asgard, they had to up that game a bit. You know, it has to look even more majestic.
It has to look majestic and be reminiscent of all of the stuff you saw in the previous films, Asgard. So the throne room had to be recreated. The Bifrost Junction, let's call it that. had to look the same, but everywhere else it had to be reminiscent and remind you of that. So they did a really good job with that. But specifically Sakaar, oh my God, it was like Jack Kirby's basement threw up in there. And that was great. It was so great. The lines everywhere just reminded me of every panel of a Jack Kirby. There's a certain scene where, I guess, right at the reveal of the Grand Master, they switch to the other point of view, and there are these, like, I don't know, sentries or robots. It looks like the Rainbow Power Rangers behind them, but they're all wearing these costumes. I swear, every single one of those masks and helmet designs and outfits is right out of the comics, and it just made me happy. And every line on the wall of that place looks right out of a Kirby. It looked like the fourth world from DC in a lot of places. I was just like, oh, squee, so much Kirby.
Well, the thing is if you're going to take inspiration from somebody, take it from a master, you know?
Yeah, but it's not just inspiration. It was more like, wow, this is the theme, this is the setting. Make sure you get this right so that it looks like it. Don't just fake it.
So, what did you think about the relationship between Thor and Loki in this film?
I thought they were believable brothers. I both of us have brothers, right?
Yeah.
I have younger brothers. I think your brothers are all older.
Yes.
So we both understand the weird, antagonistic but still loving relationships. And how
I agree.
much each of them, they're the only person, other person in the world that you know who could aggravate you in certain ways. And
Well,
still make you want to protect them from evil.
and that's the thing. I mean, when they're on the elevator and they're talking, and Loki's talking about staying there would be the best idea for him, and Thor agrees with him, and Loki's like, "Did we just agree on something?" You know, and Thor's line, "Loki, I thought the world of you," and the reaction from Loki. Because he didn't expect that. You know, I and it kind of plays with so many things to a certain degree, because I mean, is I know Loki's the adopted one, but is he younger or older than Thor?
I think they're around the same age.
Okay. So, you know, and Loki, did Loki always know that he was adopted, or did he find, or was it the first film he found out?
The first movie he finds out.
Okay. So
He
that's when he
finds
found
out
out
for
he was
his lifetime he has been lied to. Yeah.
adopted. Yeah. So, but the thing is, I mean, that's got to do something to somebody to find out that you're not the natural son of whoever you thought you were, and you're not the natural brother of the person that you thought you were. So you're always kind of on the outside. It's automatic. No matter how much you were loved and how much care you were given and how you were treated, you'll always have that thought in the back of the head that you're not as cared for as the others because you're not their natural son,
Well, and
natural child.
add in the added indignity of that you thought you were being raised to take the throne
Yeah.
your whole life, and if you were worthy enough, right, that you would be the throne, and then when you find out you're not even firstborn, you don't believe that Odin would have ever given you the throne. So there's this added set of jealousy there, and then that moment when Thor says, "I thought the world of you," you could. This is just brilliant acting, but you can see it right on Tom Hiddleston's face. He is faced with this, oh wow, this person does not have the jealousy that I have.
Yeah.
He doesn't even understand it.
Exactly.
He considers me just his brother. Wow, I didn't realize that until that moment. And it's like a momentary flash on the two of them. Just brilliant. So my answer is brilliant. That's why I said believable brothers, because they really do. They are a very good pair together, I think. Every single scene with them in it together is fantastic. I especially like the one where he goes, "I've never seen this man before in my life." And he goes, "We're brothers." Adopted.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too, but no, it just kind of got me because there was that love there, but at the same time, it's just that Loki has done so much crap to Thor and in general. I mean, I know he's the god of mischief and whatever, but he's betrayed people so many times,
Yeah,
you know,
but you're in
and
this situation where you are the god of mischief, and your brother is the invincible Thor. I mean, it almost requires you to ratchet up your pranksterism to insane danger levels just so that it has some effect on the invincible Thor. It's not really invincible Thor, but
That just wow. So the thousands of people that died in New York, that's
yeah. No, I love how they
just
bring.
a playful
I love how they bring. That's the other thing I'm saying. When they go to talk to Doctor Strange in that short conversation, he recaps why people do not want Loki on Earth.
joke.
And they do it again. I think Banner says it again. Why? Or no, he says it again when they're on the ship getting ready to go back to Earth.
Well, not only that, but during the play.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. The exposition in this movie is thick so that they recap what happened in the first Thor and the second Thor. They let you know that Jane's not in this fucking movie. She's not going to be in this movie. Mutual dumpage. It just keeps coming. The exposition keeps on coming, except for things that are new that happened since those events. They just don't talk about. They just like, fill it in, man. So I live in a nice apartment on Sakaar.
There you go. But going back to the Loki thing is, and you can disagree with me or agree with me, or depending on how you want to look at it. But I think we all have someone in our life like Loki.
Yeah.
Well, no, seriously. I mean, somebody that it's not that they're
I have accounts of Loki's in my life.
it's just the people that you believe in and you care for and you love and you try to believe in that person and they keep twisting a knife in your back or doing something upsetting. But the thing is that you still try to believe in them.
You thought you could always count on them, but it turns out you can only count on them to always let you down. Oh, now I'm sad now. Thank you.
But the thing is that you're giving them the second chance and the third chance and the fourth chance because one, they are that close to you and then they do mean something to you to where you're just giving them the chance to prove that in the end you're not wrong and then in the end that they will do the right thing.
Yes, but as Thor teaches in this movie, that doesn't mean you should allow them to destroy you. So you can assume that they are going to be a vengeful shit and turn you in and catch them in the end and paralyze them and leave them twitching.
Yes, exactly. And I'm just saying, Thor learned, you know?
Yes. Because he has been tricked by Loki every single time, every single movie, right up until that one scene. And I was like, wow, that is just perfect. Before he knows what's going to happen, he humiliates him by throwing him at a bunch of guards. He tells him he loves him. He gives him every opportunity to not do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. He gives him every opportunity to not do what he knows he's going to do.
Yes. And then rubs it in his face. I knew you were going to do this, and I fucked you over.
Planned ahead. I learned.
Was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
All this movie was it deserved all the money it made, and it made a lot more money than it was expected.
And I understand why people seem to think that it's too playful, that there's too much comedy in it. But honestly, I think that was not a detriment to this movie. I think it actually enhanced it. It should have been,
We saw
especially with everything.
two movies that were played too straight with some comedy. It didn't work. I mean, work as well as we wanted it to. Those movies weren't hateful, but they weren't good.
And this movie brought it up, man. And I'm like, this is something I'd rather see, especially when it comes to comic book movies. Now, the thing that always got me with Thor, I like the character as part of the Avengers. Okay. I had a hard time reading the character in its own book. It's a good character and everything, but it's too much Shakespearean for me. It's too thou and thee and stuff like that. And I know that's supposed to be the basis of the character, but I could never get into it. So even watching the movies, it was kind of like, all right, good movie, good action, da da da. But this, if the other two movies were like this, I would have no problem seeing them. Still there? Did you run away on me?
No, I'm still here. I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Unfortunately, we are going to have to wrap because I see that it is getting to be that time.
All right.
So.
Well, I just wanted to say I really enjoyed this movie. I really liked the way it was shot, the way it was half improvised. And the way it had no fear whatsoever about just tearing down whatever things that held it down, which is what they did. I really like that Chris Hemsworth pulled his weight everywhere and said, "I want to film in Australia," and they went to Australia to film the movie.
I
I
like
like
the
that he said, "I don't want to wear this damn wig anymore," and so they cut his hair.
I like the chances that they took with this movie. I like the fact that they were given the ability to take those chances. I even like the fact that they used a throwaway line from a Make-A-Wish kid in the film.
Yes.
I thought that was awesome, and they even went with that. The movie has so much going for it that I don't mind seeing it again and again and again. Because there's something you're going to catch each time you watch it, or there's something you're going to forget, and when you see it again, it's going to be like the first time again. So I really enjoyed the movie. So I take it we give it a two thumbs up.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I
And
think that's going to wrap. Go ahead.
looking forward to the next vehicle that contains Thor and or Hulk.
Well, always. But go ahead, Alan. Why don't you sign us out?
All right, I'm Alan Shockley, and that's Larry Snowdy, and we were contractually obligated to discuss yet another Marvel film, and this one's in a can.
Yay!
Yay! Have a good week, Larry.
You too, my friend.
Bye-bye. Also, if you want to hear more of Contractually Obligated, please give us a like, subscribe, rate us on iTunes, all that nice stuff, or you can wait around and watch us on YouTube.